Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Kernels. I'm Christopher Hooton, the Independent's culture editor and human man, and this week mostly just been witnessing as Hollywood implodes. But in amongst that, I managed to find time to talk to Azif Kapadia, who is one of the directors of Netflix's new show, Mindhunter, that I feel like most of you are probably familiar with by this point. It's kind of didn't get a huge amount of promotion and advertising, and yet it's kind of seeped into everyone's watching, I've found, and a lot of people have managed to smash out all 10 episodes already. So if you're not familiar, I think you'll still get something out of this interview, because it kind of has two parts to it. The show is about the FBI in the 70s, and kind of around the time when they stopped, rather than just locking up serial killers, thought, hang on, maybe we can talk to these people and try and work out what's going on inside their head, and better understand them, and maybe we can stop people from doing similar things in the future, or we can try and understand why they have and get to the perps quicker. It's a very gripping, well-crafted, smart show, and it doesn't rely on gore, which is something me and Azif talk about, and the direction is very controlled and stylish. So I wanted to talk to Azif, who directed episodes 3 and 4, about the show and about what it was like to work on it, and, you know, David Fincher's the mastermind behind it, what it was like to learn from him. But I also wanted to talk about how TV shows are put together when they have multiple directors, and who decides who's doing what episode, and how do they all operate independently and yet create a show that feels like cohesive and still like it's one show. So I'm not going to jabber on, because we discussed most of this in the interview. What you really need to know about him: he's a British director, it's his first time doing TV, and his probably two most well-known works are the Amy documentary, Amy Winehouse documentary, Amy, and Senna. So I hope you enjoy, and as always, thanks for listening. And, you know, if you get a chance today, subscribe to the podcast, rate the podcast, review the podcast, follow us on Twitter, on Instagram, call your mother, buy a yo-yo, just go and stand under the sun and feel humbled. I don't know. Thanks, and yeah, catch you in a couple of weeks.
Hey, Zeus, how you doing?
Hey, man, you all right?
Yeah, good to meet you.
Good to meet you.
Just been rampantly reading about all the Mueller stuff. I guess as someone who's just been directing stuff about the FBI, you've been interested as well.
It was interesting to be in America during the election.
Yeah.
Just put it that way. I was shooting this show
really?
During the election. Yeah. So it was a strange time.
Yeah.
And also being away from home meant it was basically watching all of the kind of TV of you know, Clinton and Trump and everything, and Farage was on TV a lot in the background. I kept going, I just come from Brexit and that, to go straight to the American election and be watching the news and going, it's the same, they're using the same language. There's a lot in common with the way they were pushing for Brexit and the way they're pushing. Then you realise there's a lot of links in the background, which I kind of subconsciously was thinking, there's something going on here, these are the same people.
Yeah, it was a crazy time. I was in the US when Trump fired Comey, and I was like trying to leave my hotel room, but I was just like glued to the cable news. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, congrats on Mindhunter.
Great.
I really enjoyed it.
Good.
A show that seemed like it snuck up on a lot of people, I think, that people weren't that aware of, and then it came out, and then everyone I know was suddenly watching it and got really into it.
Which is great.
Yeah.
I guess that's a nice way to do it. Yeah. I think that was it did sneak up on you.
Yeah. I was thinking about how, like, if you're, you know, if you're a big movie fan and you're interested in how movies come together, you can follow the process of, you know, who's being tapped to write it, who's being tapped to direct, like, from beginning to end, you know, in, like, Deadline, Hollywood Reporter, or Trademarks. With TV, it's not so much. I think people don't know about the process as much. So I kind of was interested to know how you became involved with Mindhunter, like, how that process went down.
Good question, you know, because I'll be honest, this is my first experience of TV. So I've come from the features and from doing drama and from doing documentaries, and I've sort of done commercials, but I've never really done television. I never found anything that excited me. And with anything, it's like there's a lot of luck. You've got to be in the right place at the right time. And also there's a lot of prep, I suppose, that you do that you don't know you're doing at the time. So this, from my point of view, you'd have to ask David how it came from their side. But I was out, we're talking about, I heard about this, not 2000, so it would have been 2015, 2016 is when I first heard about this show, and I would have heard about it from my agent. And I think Charlize is at WME.
Yeah.
She was developing the show. I know a little bit. I knew Joe Penhall. So I knew he was working on this show. And I knew it was Fincher's project. And he was show running it. And I heard something about they were interested in me. And then it went quiet again. And you go, wow, this would be great. Fincher, Charlize Theron, Joe Penhall. But I heard a little peep. And then it went quiet for months. And I was like, okay, forget about it. And then I was in LA a lot because I was on the kind of promotion of Amy, and I happened to be flying like every weekend. I'd be in New York, I'd be in LA, and I'd be coming back home, and I'd be flying back. And then it was like they'd like to meet you. So it was then I met with David, and I met with Josh, who's one of the producers, Josh Donan. As literally, I was in kind of award season on Amy, and I met with them, and I subsequently learned that David had liked Senna a lot, and he'd liked Amy, and Charlize had liked Amy, and we had a chat. And I don't think they'd seen any drama that I had made. But funnily enough, once I'd read the scripts, they'd sent me some scripts that had told me about the project and how it wasn't going to be. It's really interesting because how they pitched it is basically how the show turned out. It wasn't going to be gory. It was going to be people talking in a room discussing bad things. And you would understand the psychology of them, and it's going to be recorded interviews, and it's going to be about these guys said a crime's already happened, but they're trying to understand the brains. And essentially what I said is, well, this sounds fascinating because the timing is perfect for me because, one, I'd love to work with you. I love the idea. I'm really interested in the psychology of people. And I have spent the last 7-8 years of my life making two documentaries, Senna and Amy, where I didn't film people. I met with them and I did audio interviews. Mm. And I would do the audio interview, go away, do a transcript, and then study what they'd said and try to piece together what had happened in the story. And then I'd find some visuals to put on it. So literally, I'd come out of making Amy where I was dealing with someone had died, a young woman had died, didn't seem to be much of an investigation. And I was like, I can't believe no one really looked at what happened here. I'll be the person who will look at it. And then we became detectives almost.
Yeah.
Our job was to unravel and to talk to everybody, and sometimes people that you liked, sometimes people you didn't like. But the idea was to be straight, chat to them, get a transcript, try to understand what they were saying, and that's what the show turned out to be.
That's interesting, because I was thinking, like, preparing for this, like, looking back at your filmography, is like, it didn't leap out to me that you were necessarily, like, an obvious choice to be doing, like, a kind of police procedural. But then when you think about it in terms of investigating Amy, and it is all about the conversations, it does actually make a lot of sense.
Yeah, and it really helped that. And then once I was on the show, we were in prep, and David told me the story, that was just like, it's a great story, which obviously I wasn't there, so this could be made up. But I'm sitting having pizza with David in Pittsburgh, and he's like, but I still don't really understand, why am I here? How did I end up here? And he's like, well, once, you know, my friend comes around and knocks on my door and says, you've got to watch this. And his friend is Brad Pitt. And Brad Pitt turns up with a copy of Senna and says, this is great, you've got to see this. And then they go around to their other mates in Soderbergh's house and they watch it or something like that. It was just the most surreal story.
Yeah.
So they had seen Senna and liked it, because Brad Pitt had liked it. And then I think Steven Soderbergh is really into Amy Winehouse. So it just is luck that there was this connection to these other films that I'd made. And and then they'd seen The Warrior, which I gave them, which is my first feature. And that was him. And then we were out there and it was like a great experience.
Yeah, sure. I was trying to work out whose baby it is. Is it David Fincher's? Is it Joe Penhall's? Or like,
I don't know. I think this is all precedes my involvement, but I think it started with Charlize,
right?
Who optioned the book. She gave it to David, and then Joe came on and spent quite a few years adapting it.
Yeah.
Have you read the book?
No, I haven't.
An interesting book, but I think you know, Joe then did an adaptation where he had to take lots of characters and lots of stories and created, you know, Holden and Tench.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But yeah, that's as far as I know, it was the three of them. And then really it was Joe writing, and then it's always David's very particular, very precise, and it was kind of, it's his show, he runs it.
Mm. And presumably it's David Fincher who sets the directorial style.
Yeah, that's, of course, yeah.
Yeah. And then I always find it interesting about that TV when it's different directors, but how do you keep it cohesive so everyone's keeping within that? Because it does have a Fincher style to it, doesn't it? Even the episodes that everyone else has worked
for. For me, that was the most exciting thing. Yeah. Was to go into something with someone whose work I really like, but I honestly, before I went into it, I did not really know how he did what he did. And then to just be able to spend time watching. And it's one of the things that I've, you know, I've kind of been around a while doing various different things. You're very hard, if you're a director, to watch another director work. Because really, there's no job really you can do on a show. If you are a sound person, you can work your way up. If you're in the camera department, you can work your way up. If you're in the editorial department, you can work your way up. If you're an actor, you may have a small role and you get a bigger role. But if you're directing, you're directing or you're not. Being an AD, an assistant director, is not necessarily the way to become a director. If you're production, you work. So it's very rare that I've had the opportunity or met the person who's willing to share their experience. And David was really giving and really sharing. And it was always very much like, you have the freedom, we're hiring you to direct. But there are aesthetics which I kind of learned bit by bit from the crew and by watching rushes. I mean, I was the third director out of four to shoot. So by then I'd seen rushes and I wasn't around for a lot of the prep. Quite a few of the team, I think, had been scouting together, watched movies together in America. I was the last one to come on board. So I didn't have any of that experience. I just saw what had already started in prep and was shooting. And I would watch it and try to understand the lenses and the framing and the reason, the kind of the performances and the camera style from afar. And then once I got there, I spent time with a DOP and then we would talk about, okay, there are lenses which are the preferred lenses, but apart from that you can kind of do what you want. But it's not a handheld show, it's not a Steadicam show. If you want to move the camera, it's tracking. So there were certain rules which I thought, I don't think they'd call them rules, there were kind of elements that were, this is the palette of the show. And I thought, that's great, I'm cool with that. My dream would be, because I knew I was doing episode 3 and 4 directly after David's, just don't screw it up. You know, I'm going to be the one that they will watch directly after his episode. So it was really going to be, I am not here trying to say, this is how I'm going to do it. My job was, as much as possible, I'm not David Fincher, was to be myself, but to try to find the way for the audience to not be taken out of the show when episode 3 and 4 come along.
Yeah, it's so interesting because, you know, so usually it's all with directors, it's about idiosyncrasies, whereas this is more about funneling yourself into...
Yeah, and you know what? This is really interesting because that is something that I felt when I was making documentaries, when I am making documentaries. Mm. For me, the films that work, drama, initially, I don't want to be aware, oh, look how clever I am when I'm watching a film. That's not how that's not my directing style. And when I'm doing a doc, there are lots of very successful documentary directors who are always in their films. You see them, you hear them, it's about their experience of something. When I started making docs, I was like, I don't want you to think about who made it. I just want you to care about the character and be in the character's head, and you're following their journey as if nobody directed this. You're just watching Senna's life. Mm. This was Amy's life. And so the whole idea for me is to take myself out. It's evidently directed. There's a hell of a lot of work that goes into it. But I want to be invisible. And then at the ending, you go, who made that? All right, that guy, all right.
Yeah.
And I wanted my experience on this was, it's always going to be Fincher's show. They've spent years on it. I'm going to come in. I'm an in-between kind of what I've been shot before, And some of the ending had already been shot, and the middle hadn't been shot when I came along. So myself and Tobias actually spent a bit of time together, who shot 5 and 6.
Right.
So we, and our episodes kind of crossed over. So we were the two people that were around. And then there was one point on the set, when we were shooting in the studio, David was shooting, we were shooting a car scene. And everyone was shooting scenes for their eps, but we're using the same actors, Jonathan and Holt, and the same car. So rather than taking the car apart, relighting it, and we basically kept the car. David shot his scenes, he walked off. I shot my scenes, I walked off. And Tobias shot his scenes. So there were three directors set at the same time. But it was great.
Yeah.
Because it was like, we're all on the same team. It wasn't competitive. It wasn't like, you know, it was a really interesting way of working, which I've never had in my life. That experience of three of us all sitting there looking at your iPads when someone else is shooting, but being aware that we're all part of the same team.
This is probably a really dumb question, but like in situations like that when it's all on, even on the same set, why is it not just the same director for the entire season?
You'd have to ask David. But I just think it's a hell of a lot of work.
Right.
Some people try and do it, but I think 10 eps is a hell of a lot. And the schedules and times just mean that I guess you have to break it up a bit. And he wanted to. I don't know if he wanted to take on 10 features.
Yeah.
You know, it's the equivalent of doing a feature. And sometimes you've got to be prepping one to be ready to shoot the next one, so that when one finishes, because the crew carry on. So the crew are working like for 9-10 months non-stop. It's unbelievable what they're doing. But the directors have to be on it the minute they start, because the schedule is tough. And so the actors and everyone else is continuing on, and we come straight in with our idea and our passion and our energy, which drives them on to the next block of shooting.
That's funny, I was talking...
I had a lot of location stuff. My
Yeah, because you had the bit in the scrapyard. Yeah,
so I like shooting on location, so it's interesting. That's part of the process of developing your eps, is that I was working with writers, and my instinct is to kind of take things out of a room and to try to go out. But it just happened to fit perfectly with the beginning of that whole storyline, which is in the middle of the series.
Yeah.
The body, where's the body found, who are the people? So... I think some of the other eps were more studio-y and interiors, and I quite like shooting a location, which makes it more challenging because it was autumn, daylight hours are getting shorter, and because of the technique that David shoots, he shoots a lot of coverage, there's a lot of shots. So trying to get as many options, so stylistically you have as many shots that you can cut a scene in the same way on location, is quite a challenge.
Yeah,
I read an interview with the DOP, Eric. He's given quite a few interviews. Worth reading if you had a chance. But he said the toughest day on the entire series was a particular scene that we had to shoot with an interview when we had really bad weather, like rain, sun, cloud, everything happening every few minutes, really noisy, dogs barking, cars, helicopters, planes. And it was my first day of shooting. So his toughest day on the entire show, which is he was on it for like 8-9 months, was day one.
You didn't know that inside he was like, ah.
And I could see all the crew were going like, what idiot picked this location? It was kind of, it was me. But obviously when we scouted it, it was incredibly quiet. And the day we go to shoot, there's roadworks down the road. It was just the worst. It was really tough.
It's always interesting to hear from DOPs, actually. You don't much in the press, but it's always fascinating.
I think if you work with David Fincher, the look is such a key part. And Eric was brilliant. Eric Messerschmidt.
Yeah.
And very young. And David's great. To kind of go back to your first question, he gives people a chance. He's, if you look historically, famously, he's got kind of people who are on the rise and said, Eric, I don't think I've been a DOP on a show before. This is his first show.
Well,
you know, he's a gaffer, which is an electrician, who's done some big films, and he's like, no, I think you can do this.
That's really cool.
That's pretty amazing. And then people come out on the other end and they're like, suddenly they've done this big show. So for me, it was like, great, I've never done TV, but I've never also been attracted to a lot of the stuff that I'd read.
Yeah.
Or they just didn't think I could do it. And then Fincher comes along and is like, no, I think you can do it. And it's really good at giving you confidence to say, oh, you do your thing.
This is your first experience with this, but I was thinking about how I was talking to Cillian Murphy last week because the new season of Peaky Blinders is coming out.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how in the first season of that, they had different directors.
Yeah.
And now they've transitioned to having the same one.
Right.
And he was saying that sometimes he did find it a bit difficult working with different directors on season because you're gonna feel maybe pulled in different directions by them. Were you conscious of that, or did you pick up on that or anything like that?
Yeah, but I met David and I met Tobias, who shot after me, and there was a guy called Andrew who'd shot before me, but I never met Andrew. So it was a weird thing to kind of follow on from somebody that you've not met. But that kind of personality, obviously, more so with a crew, the cast, I'm still getting to know them. It's only later on you get to know them well enough. It's almost like you're halfway through. But I think that is a curious thing about TV, I think. That must be a challenge. And I think for the actors, definitely, in the end, you'd have to ask Killian, who's done quite a few series and a very experienced actor. In the end, you just end up nodding and just do your own thing because you know your character better than anyone else. I don't know. You'd have to ask how he did it.
I see what you mean, though, about with crew, because everything's so habitual that if someone has a slightly different rhythm, it must be difficult to adapt.
Yeah, I think... I don't know. I don't know how many episodes there are, Peaky Blinders. I don't know how
they're on. This is season 4 coming up soon.
Yeah, I'm really bad also because I don't really. When you're working, you don't have much time to watch stuff. So I don't really know about any other shows. But in this particular case, that's how it was set up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the thing I like. One more question actually about the breakdown of it. In terms of who directs which episodes, were you part of that decision? And if not, do you know what went into it and why they decided, right, as if you're doing 3 and 4?
It's a really interesting question. I think I may well have read at some point all of the eps, or most of the eps. It was already long before I came on board, probably decided that David was going to open and end the series. At some point, I'm sure there was a discussion of why don't you do all of it, and he obviously didn't want to do all of it. He wanted to bring on directors. But he was going to open the series and end the series, so it was basically three blocks in the middle. And like I said, I think I was the last to come on board. And then it almost came down to schedule, like when are you available, when are you not available? And what was up for discussion is whether or not I was going to shoot in the summer. So this is last year. Am I going to shoot in the summer or the autumn? That's what I remember, because they started in May, and I think they finished in November, December. So they were shooting for a good chunk of the year. And the first block was going to be David, probably the second block was going to be David. And then this other guy, Andrew, sort of said, I'll do that block. And then with Tobias and I, the interesting conversation came down to, we've both got kids, so it was like, well, summer holidays, we're probably going to be not available, so in the autumn. And it was like, you're always juggling kind of the episode with the block and then family. And then, interestingly enough, I don't know if you noticed it when you watch it, but the seasons change during the series. So it starts with summer, it ends with summer, but in the middle is autumn and winter. And so my ep became autumn, and then Tobias did the winter months. And so that's how it ended up being worked out, is that for my storyline, the idea of that dump and a body being found somewhere that didn't look pretty.
Yeah.
It needed to look, it was one of the bigger set pieces that we had to create. So the idea of it looking snowy or rainy and grim with no greenery was one of the factors that then defined when we would shoot my series, my eps, and that became as late as possible.
Was that one of the most difficult shoots you did on Mindhunter, that one? Or?
Well, it was it's a big set,
you
know, and it's kind of a visually quite an important thing, and finding the right place, and then literally it came down to, well, when is the winter going to arrive? Because it was quite a mild winter. And so, there was a lot of going there, looking at it, going, well, it's still really green. Because there's a couple of moments in that when Holden, Jonathan's character,
is looking
is looking around. And it's just like, it can look really pretty if it's lush and green and sun's shining and it looks quite grim. And I think originally David had scouted it in the winter and liked it. And he was like, we should be doing this in the winter. So there was a whole thing with rejigging around.
Yeah.
This is what's
happening.
My scene, my eps then affect Tobias's eps because they have to come after. So it was like little conversation like that affects everything. And it was perfect timing for me then because I was shooting this time last year. So it was September, October, November is when I was shooting.
Yeah, this is what's been happening to Game of Thrones at the moment, because every season they're getting further north in the story. Oh, so they need snowier and snowier weather and having to push back production longer each year.
Interesting. Well, where do they shoot all the snowy stuff? Is that studio or do they actually go?
No, I think they do it in some in Iceland, I think. And a lot of it in Belfast. But,
right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And another major thing about Mindhunter, like one of the things that I've seen that people talking about most, I think, is Cameron Britton's performance as Ed Kemper.
Amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. I wondered how much of that he brought to set and it was fully formed and how much he had to work with, you know, you
so,
guys.
So he, as far as I can remember now, he's in episode two,
he's introduced
three.
Before, isn't he? Yeah, before.
Yeah, he's in episode two. He's in episode 10 because he's got there's a brilliant ending.
Yeah.
So that had all been shot before I arrived to do episode 3, which is he's in my app.
Mm.
It's in 3, isn't it? Yeah. So I think a lot of that David had already worked with him.
Yeah.
I'd already shot. I'd already seen cuts. And he was great. And he no, that performance had already been he'd been cast perfectly.
Mm.
He's done his prep. He's an amazing actor. And then David had done quite a few scenes already, so that was one I got lucky enough to work with him. But also the location of that room where the interviews happened had been set, and he had already been in character for a while. Although
yeah.
he'd been away, and then I came along and reshot. So again, that's the kind of interesting thing, is how it's all shot out of sequence, which is interesting.
Yeah, must be exciting.
Films
having,
are always done like
yeah,
that.
Having already seen the rushes and knowing how good the chemistry is with that character must have been cool to be then in the
yeah,
room and know
yeah,
you're
and also,
doing.
You know, you don't know, you feel like, wow, this guy's amazing, and the writing's amazing, but I think he's the kind of the star that's people have learned about, and he's become revealed because he's not, his name wasn't originally, you know, above the title or anything. You know, you have the two main characters.
Mm,
you have Anatov,
yeah.
They're the three, you know, key characters, I suppose. And then you've got this guy that you never... I don't know. Has anyone heard of him? Has
no,
he
I don't think so.
He's just amazing.
Yeah.
And that's not him. You know, he's acting.
Yeah.
When you meet the guy, he's very different
I'm
to
sure,
the guy
yeah.
that you see. And then if you get into the show, then, you know, more and more people are now looking to find the real people it's based on, and you realize
yeah.
how amazing
I was going to say, yeah, everyone's now doing side-by-sides and looking at those. I'm sure as a documentarian you were interested to watch some of those videos, were you, before?
I actually, what I had done is I'd read interviews with him. There are quite a few. This guy gave quite a lot of interviews, the real person.
Yeah.
And so more, it was for the script. When we were working on the scripts to look at the actual things that he'd said and say, this is really interesting. It's not in the script. It's not in the movie. What about using some of this or some of this? So I didn't actually study him on YouTube because I don't really like getting confused by that real person. It's like the actor and the character's already been set. That's what I'm going to work with. Now, obviously, beforehand, people had looked at that and studied him. I think that's something interesting about the show, that it kind of leads to the audience. If you get into it, you start doing a bit of your own investigation, because these are real people. These are real things that they did, these things, and they said these things. And then you meet the actual person and you see how much work went into the casting. And so that was interesting to start. There was definitely a bit of, when we were casting certain people for our reps, that looking at the real person and saying, who do we cast that's a really good actor, but that also looks like the actual person? And then what did they say and what did they do, and how do we make sure elements of that are in the screenplay so it is as close as we possibly can, fictionalizing something, but you're basing it on fact.
Yeah. Two things I really liked about the show I thought were really unique was, one, obviously the fact that there isn't, aside from the photos and the splices in the title sequence, there isn't any violence in it.
Yeah.
And I kind of started to realize that. I don't know what episode. I hadn't almost realized that we hadn't witnessed a murder, and I was like, oh shit, there's actually... We're not seeing any of this. And I thought that was like a brave decision, because they could so easily could have gone down the gore route.
And
I also like that, I don't think this happens in your episode. I think it's maybe slightly after, but they set it up that Holden's going to maybe have an affair with the professor, and that seems like where it's going. And then it just cuts you off and is like, no, she's a lesbian, that's not on the cards. And then everything goes back to normal again. I quite like that.
Right. That's good. That's good, yeah. I mean, what was the first part? Sorry.
The first part was about the lack of, you know, gore and...
Sorry, yeah, of course. I think that's one of the things that attracted me to it, I have to be honest. I'm not a gore guy, and I'm getting older now, and I'm like, I don't watch that stuff. And I was worried about... I would be worried about doing something. I'm not a fan of just making shows where, you know, awful things happen to women or whatever, or just for the hell of it, violence for the hell of it. It doesn't interest me. I think it has to be psychological. It has to be... If something violent happens, it has to affect you. And I think that's what's interesting about the show. Right from the beginning, David, Joe, everyone has said, there's going to be people talking about stuff.
It's something,
and you're not sure
if
they're going to really go with it.
Yeah.
And you hope they do. And I have to say, what they said is what was made. You know, I have, in a way, one of the few action scenes in the whole series. I have a car crash.
Yeah.
You know, something happened in that way, like, which was a bit of a shock that makes you jump. But it was that I remember thinking, okay, that should be interesting, and then realizing, okay, this is how David works. You go, okay, it's going to be a car crash, not how car crashes I've done in the past, where you actually get, you know, a lot of it is very technical. It's very, very clever how he works. A lot of it is very controlled. So, but that was it. There was no. I mean, they hand in guns when they go to prisons. Has anyone pulled a gun out at any point?
I think so.
I don't think so.
Rare for a show that when there's FBI involved.
And then I read an interview with John Douglas, where he's like, this is the most accurate depiction of what I actually do, because everyone else that's tried to adapt his life or his work in other versions, at some point the cop has to pull a gun at. And these guys just haven't done that.
No.
And because they didn't. That wasn't their role.
There's no Miranda rights and flashlights and...
all of that business, you know. So, no, you're right. I think the opening makes you jump.
Yeah.
The opening sequence. And I think that's about it. And then really the title sequence puts you on edge, I think. It's a great title sequence.
It is cool.
I mean, I remember seeing it bit by bit, David doing that, shooting it himself, and, you know, little elements were being added, and I kept thinking, oh my God, I'm not sure. And then you see it finished and you watch it, and that sets the tone.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, because you've become quite uncomfortable watching the way it's begun, you don't really know where it's going to go. I think that's great.
It's such a subtle thing, but it's the fact, for me, that it's not just a frame of a dead body, but it's that slight zoom as well that it does across it. It's really
disorientating,
like,
isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is more kind of, the show is more unnerving because it doesn't show it in a way. When you hear someone describing such things, like, as if they're just like making a stew, that kind of puts you more on edge than if it was shown.
And these are real people.
Yeah,
that's the thing. This is real. It doesn't need too much more. And I think look, the challenge, and I suppose the thing that's great about the show is it is always that. We're aiming for an audience has to do some of the work and have to imagine things. And those are the films that I like, you know. We're going to put it out there. So from years ago, it would have been, I don't know, Polanski. And then in recent years, Michael Haneke's films. You know, the films that make me uncomfortable and unsettle me are not the ones that are smacking me around the face with gore.
Yeah.
They're the ones that make my imagination do some work. And I think that's what this show does.
Yeah. And you were talking earlier about the pressure of having to do 3 and 4 after Fincher. Did you get feedback as such on your episodes, or is it more just left to the public and that's when you find out whether your episodes were liked or not?
Well, I guess that's the big difference between doing a movie, and I was talking to a friend about this, you know, when you make a feature, it goes out and you have a premiere, or you have an event, or you have reviews immediately. On this one, it's interesting because we're doing press now, 2 weeks after the show series went out, because initially I think only the first couple of eps were shown. I went to the London Film Festival event with David and they showed the first 2 eps. So then this is different because I'm now getting messages from people from around the world saying, just saw the show, it's amazing. But everyone will watch it in their own time, which is different.
Yeah.
It's a different experience, and I think it's cool. At the time, David gives you his notes when you're making it. And, you know, David is a man of few words. So when he says, this is great, I love this, I'm like, okay, that's good. And the crew are like, he never says that. He loved that scene. He never says that. We've not had that the whole time. And I'm like, oh, he's just saying that, isn't it? But actually, you know, he says it, he means it. And I think that's what I learned, was that a few words, like, so you'd get a note if you'd shot a scene or the rushes, he'd watch the rushes and go, I love this, this is great. And that was like, this is good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then once we've cut the show, you just don't know until the audience see it. You don't know. I thought it was interesting, but I also know it's an unusual show. Like I said, it's not like action in a traditional sense. You're waiting to see what do people make of it. But the word on the street so far seems to be good.
Yeah, it does.
Seems to be good.
Yeah. Do you know how it's mapped out for the future, or how long they see it running? Or?
I read years ago, like a Bible, but I don't know. Let's see. Who knows? I think just as we were shooting, the eps changed a bit.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens and where it goes.
All right, that was Colonels. I hope you enjoyed my Nazif's chat. Incredibly nice man who's very excited to be working on a huge show and has clearly learned a lot during it. I hope he'll be back for season 2, which is yet to be renewed, but it seems pretty much dead set at this point. All right, thanks so much for listening again, and catch you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.